But welcome. This is Mike McCormick with Preserving Your Wealth, KGVM Radio. Once a week, I like to interview somebody that I think is influential and important in town, and I'm lucky enough to have the author of a book called How Clients Buy. And in reading this book, it occurred to me there's a town of small business individuals. This is material that is important maybe to everybody, whether you are owning your small business and looking to grow it and trying to figure out how do your clients buy. But also maybe if you're working for the man and dreaming about the business that you might want to run, or maybe even dreaming about how to make your boss happy, which is really your key job if you do have a boss, by helping them understand how clients buy. This is a real world guide to selling professional services. It's still hot off the presses, and I'm lucky enough to have Doug Fletcher here in the studio to visit with me about his book and what you hope to get out of it, Doug. And why don't you just start with that? What is it that you hope to affect in terms of outcomes with this book?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on. This is really exciting. I'm a huge fan of your show, and
I appreciate that a lot, Doug.
Yeah,
thank you.
Cool. No, it's an honor to be on. Thank you. So I wrote this book with Tom McMakin. Many of you may know Tom McMakin here in town. He's the CEO of Profitable Ideas Exchange, very successful company.
And I know that as Pi.
Correct.
Which is across the street from Matt Brewing Company. And
yes.
Not, in fact, a shop where you can get a pie.
That is correct. You will not find an apple pie at Pie, but you will find a beer at Matt Brewing. So Tom and I wrote this book. It was just published this past spring by Wiley in New York, and the book's doing real well. It's currently in the top 10 in its business category on Amazon.com. We're real happy about that.
That's amazing.
It is amazing, but
you're not the only one that's writing books these days.
No, but the cool thing about it is we're in a category that is not oversaturated. So How Clients Buy is a marketing and sales book for people that sell expert services, that provide expert services. So by expert services, I mean accountants, attorneys, financial advisors, architects, engineers, people that don't make a product, right? We're highly educated, highly trained specialists at doing services that require a lot of expertise. And
any kind of consulting, really.
Any kind of consulting, right? You could be a web designer. You could be a physical, therapist. You could be,
as you go out about your life and there's something that you don't know how to do, from taxes to incorporation to...
Correct.
And so many things.
So many things. So let me get back to my point about there's not many books in this category. And one of the reasons why we're doing well is because if you go to Amazon, for example, and go to the search bar and you type in, books on leadership, you will get like close to 200,000 responses of books that are related to the topic of leadership. And if you go into our genre, which is, say, marketing and business development books and professional services, consulting, and so forth, there's literally been less than 10 books written in the last two or three decades on this topic.
I'm searching on Amazon right now, Doug, and I just typed in how CL for clients, how CL, and then first up on there is, in fact, your book. So this is the real deal.
Well,
what a heck of a deal. You can get it at $19.57.
I know.
Shipped to your door for free within two days. So clearly this is not a profit motive in terms of making this book.
No, I will never send my kids to college on the proceeds from this book. But getting back to why we wrote the book. So there is, as anyone that does these expert services, provides these expert services, knows, it's not enough to be really, really good at what you do in order to be successful. You have to be able to bring client business into your firm, right? So if you are working within a larger firm, you start out at the bottom, you're doing tax work, you're doing legal work, you're doing financial analysis, whatever, and you can become extremely competent at that particular service. But in order to become partner in a firm, you have to demonstrate that you can engage with clients and scope projects and bring work into the firm and what, you know, is referred to as being a rainmaker, right? And it's no different if you're a solo professional out there on your own. It's abundantly clear if you're a solo professional, you will live and die by how successful you are at bringing in, you know, new client business, right?
Absolutely. That is the challenge.
And it's a hard challenge. And interestingly enough, is that we're never taught how to do this. We're trained in finance. We're right. trained in law. We're right. trained to be an architect. We're trained to be a civil engineer. We're licensed to be a civil engineer. But nowhere along the way in school or in our firms are we ever taught, here's how you go about earning the trust of clients and bringing their business into, you know, our firm. And so...
And the educational process of becoming an expert in your field, as you say, it's so narrowly focused on the expertise part of it.
Correct.
The communication, relationship, and outcome procedure is sorely missing.
So that was the main problem we were hoping to solve with this book. And Tom and I had spent, you know, we're both in our 50s. We're not, it's clear by looking at us that we're not 20 or 25 or even 40. And we wanted to write a book. If we could go back in time to our former selves when we were, you know, an up and coming aspiring professional at, you know, 25 or 30 or 35, here are the things that we wish we had known about how to win client business without having to spend 20, 30 years figuring it out, right? Making a lot of stupid mistakes, doing everything wrong, learning a little bit along the way. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the book is primarily written for high potential, up and coming professionals in these various industries that I've mentioned, and or people that are going out on their own for the first time, and they're, you know, start hanging out a shingle, and they have never learned how to do business development. So that's why we wrote the book. There's not many books in this category. You can count on one, maybe two hands, the number of books. And that's why we're, you know, selling well on Amazon, because there's a lot of people that are looking for this help. So,
as somebody that's been over a decade in the financial services business, I can tell you that is essentially at the core of almost every training program that I've been to. The expertise part, it's kind of assumed that you've got this, mm-hmm. That you understand how markets work and asset allocation works. What they are trying to do is they're trying to help you deliver the solutions to the clients in the language and package that it is they want. And something like this would be ideal. So Doug, tell me, in terms of the feedback you're getting from people about the book, what are you hearing? I guess, what are you hearing that surprises you about what people are seeing in terms of after they read it and they recommend it to a friend and review it on Amazon, which right now it's getting, it looks like a full 5-star rating that I'm looking at. What is it that's coming out that maybe you didn't expect?
So when you write a book, and by the way, this is my first book that I've written. This is Tom's second book. You know, when you write a book, you go into a cave for 3 months, and you know, you come out 3 months later with this manuscript, and you don't know if it's good. You don't know if it's junk. You just know we've done the best job we can do. And you don't know the response that the audience is going to have to it. So
kind of like radio shows.
Kind of like radio shows, right? It's performance art. But there's a couple of things that I think have resonated with people from the book that have struck me. One is this concept in the book we talk about called shrinking the pond, mm-hmm. and it's a it's a metaphor that we borrowed from a woman who's the chief marketing officer of a financial services firm out in Minneapolis. But the concept is that we have to be perceived as being experts in what we do in order to be in that short list of candidates considered for being hired, right? If you're not in the top 2 or 3 people being considered for your work, if you're not on that short list, your odds of being chosen are pretty low, right?
Right.
So how do we get on that short list?
And let me just interject that you know, this is not a commodity service that we're talking about. This is, again, as you're alluding to, this is, you want to get it right the first time.
Correct.
So you're not going and you're not searching for the cheapest bicycle or the cheapest shovel.
Right. Yes.
You're looking for the best outcome.
In many cases, you know, in many cases, price is not the number one, you know, criteria for buyers, mm-hmm. you know, and so this metaphor of shrinking the pond is, if you're not perceived currently, independent of your expertise, if you're not in that short list of two or three people being considered, then you need to shrink the pond, meaning to narrow your target audience, what you do, such that you are a big fish in that pond. And so there's a number of different ways, you know, you can shrink the pond. You can shrink it based upon your functional expertise. You can shrink it based upon maybe the target audience that you're, industry target audience, or it could be a geographical target audience. But shrink that pond until you are a big fish. Because if you are not a big fish in the pond in which you're trying to serve, you will be undifferentiated and not recognized and not being, you know, top of mind. So that was one thing I think that was,
Give me an example of how somebody might do this?
Yeah. So, one of the examples we use in the book was a large accounting firm, large, say top 30 in the U.S., you know, not one of the big six or the big four or whatever it is, but a large, accounting firm, and they were looking to grow their business. And, you know, when you're number 30, trying to go after the Fortune 500 and compete with KPMG and Deloitte and, you know, Price Waterhouse Coopers and so forth,
it's
really hard. And so the example we have in the book is, this firm looked at their past successes over the last, you know, couple of years, and they noticed that they had worked for two or three mining companies, and they had done some really good work on some acquisitions around these mining companies, and they just decided, we're going to narrow the pond around this industry of mining, for not necessarily for all of their branding purposes and marketing purposes, for their business development purposes. They started going to mining conferences, and they joined mining associations, and they brought on their board of directors a former CEO of a mining company, and they started really developing an expertise around the unique needs of mining companies, right? So that's just one example of a company that shrunk the pond. They couldn't compete with KPMG on Fortune 500 companies, but they could credibly go into, you know, the 10 or 20 largest mining companies and say, we are the number one leading expert in the accounting needs of mining companies, and they can own that niche, and they can be a big fish in that pond. So,
and they shrunk, you know, they shrunk the pond around a client that's maybe an ideal client, right? The big industry, lots of reoccurring work. They didn't go after something that wasn't economically viable, let me put it that way.
They didn't have to create a new market. It wasn't like they were, you know, doing things necessarily differently. They just picked a different target audience. So that's one example of shrinking the pond. Another thing that came up in the from the book that we've heard from people is this notion of following your own path as it relates to developing business development skills and approaches. And I think it's tempting when you're 30 or 35 to look at those maybe one step up the rung from us and to try to copy them or to try to emulate them, mm-hmm. and go, you know, Sarah is really good at business development. I'm going to become a clone of Sarah, and I'm going to do everything Sarah's doing. If Sarah's, you know, writing white papers and speaking at conferences, then I'm going to do that. And so forth. So, but what we've learned, we interviewed almost 40 successful rainmakers from a wide variety of firms. And one of the things we learned is that each one of these people had a different approach to business development. There were commonalities, and they were achieving, in many cases, similar objectives, but they were doing it in their own way that played to the things that they were good at, the things that they liked doing, the things that they that fit their personality, and they didn't try to copy, you know, Tom's approach or Mike's approach.
I mean, that's a point that I'd like to bring up again, and I think we'll just take a short break here. This is KGVM Bozeman. This is Mike McCormick with Preserving Your Wealth, and I'm lucky enough to have Doug Fletcher here in the studio today. He's a local author, consultant, business consultant, and the book that we're talking about that he just wrote along with Tom McCain is How Clients Buy. Welcome back. This is Mike McCormick with Preserving Your Wealth, KGVM. Once a week, I like to bring in a guest to the studio, and I've been visiting with Doug Fletcher about his recent book, How Clients Buy. And Doug is helping people in the professional services area understand what it is to bring clients in. Because so often, as you spoke, is that these schools, and we've got a great accounting school here at MSU, we've got great professionals in legal, certainly in financial advisors, there's great ones all over town. And there's a high level of expertise in this town, and everybody's just got to be a bit more, one up on somebody else to get the clients, right? And that's the big question mark. And so before the break, you were just identifying, what did you say? You interviewed over 40 successful rainmakers, and what you learned, I thought was of particular interest enough to repeat, if you don't mind, Doug.
Yeah, so in addition to the experience, that Tom and I had, being in our 50s and having done this for a long time, we said, hey, you know what, rather than having two stars in this constellation, let's have, dozens of stars so that there's more data points and we can start to see if the things we've learned are similar to what other successful rainmakers, have learned. And while there was a lot of commonality, when we went out and we interviewed almost 40, senior people from law, accounting, financial services, investment banking, and so forth, management consulting, we did notice some common themes. And one of these themes was to be true to yourself. And we all have to build a network.
That's so true, to be true to yourself.
Don't try. If you're not a gifted public speaker, sure, we can all get better. But there's just some people that's one of their natural strengths. They're excellent public speakers. If that's not what you're good at and that's not what you enjoy, then don't do it. Don't be the keynote speaker at the next trade association, conference, right?
And if you don't think that everybody should buy a widget, don't go into the business of selling widgets to everybody. That's where I'm hearing this, is that being true to yourself means you have to believe that the expertise that you're providing are of significant value out there, to be proactive and identify, get your message across to these clients.
Yeah, that's, you bring up an interesting point. It happens, I don't know that it's covered in depth in our book, but I think it's fundamentally true that you cannot be good at becoming a rainmaker, which is to say bringing client business into your firm, if you don't in your bones believe what you're doing is a highly valued service, because life's too short. But a 40-year career, I can't imagine getting up every day and doing something that you didn't believe in.
Right.
And I think the veneer would wear thin. And I think that at the end of the day, clients are going to hire people that that show expertise and confidence and credibility. And I think it's hard to project those things if deep in your bones you don't believe in what you're doing, right? So that being said, these are some pretty noble professions. It's not like you can feel poorly about being a financial advisor. You're trying to help people make their lives more successful, right?
We are. And I think that that's true with everybody in town too. But at the same time, there's variability in it. Sometimes clients do feel unsatisfied based upon things that might be out of our control or poorly voiced. And so,
like the financial crisis of 2007,
I was in that camp of everybody that didn't see it coming in terms of, the violence and suddenness of it and the lack of liquidity.
Right.
So it is interesting that I think in the rainmaker world, it is a confidence game to some degree too, is that there's got to be buy-in, there's got to be belief, and there's got to be chutzpah.
It's, people like to work with people that appear to be happy and enjoy their work, right? And I think people that are confident for a number of reasons, one of which might be they are really good at what they do, right? If you've been doing something for a long time, you've got your 10,000 hours in, you know you're pretty damn good at what you do, right? There's also the confidence that, you know,
that's a reference to Malcolm Gladwell's
book. Yeah, you're getting your 10,000 hours in. You know, there's also the confidence that comes from having, you know, faced a lot of different situations and helped clients, you know, solve thorny problems. And even though you may not have solved every thorny problem, you have the confidence that, hey, we can do this, right? We can do this together.
We got this. That's the expression that we use in our firm is, hey, go outside and play. We got this.
Yeah, we got this. So another thing I wanted to touch on in the book, which I think is important, and going back to your original question, you know, what's the feedback we're hearing from people? We talk about in our book this notion of the myth of likability, right? So many of us have
the myth of likability. Oh, that's interesting.
And there's this myth out there perpetrated by movies and books and Broadway shows and things of that nature that that salespeople are the life of the party. They're backslappers. You know, they're the person at the networking event. You know, they're, you know, elbows on the bar, backslapping, you know, buying drinks, you know, that sort of thing. And while that certainly may be true in certain industries, in the professional services, what we heard from the people that we interviewed for our book and from our own experiences, that's not the way clients buy expert services, right? So what we found is that people hire people they respect and they hire people that they trust, right? And likability at best is a tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got your short list down to two or three people that you perceive as being equally competent and equally ethical and moral and mm-hmm. having mm-hmm. you know, good character, maybe if you like one slightly more than the other, maybe that gives the nod. But this notion that, you know, hey, we need to be these uber extroverts and we need to be, you know, super likable and the life of the party. At some point, we are who we are. We can't, I mean, like trying to be more likable is in some ways trying to be taller or for me to have more hair or something like that. It's like, you know what, I would replace.
That's a mature view. You know, if you go to Dale Carnegie's school of
right.
of being likable.
Right, how to win people. Friends and influence people, exactly. Right? So we took a different approach in our book in that we looked at it through the lens of the client. And we actually, we thought about, we used this technique called design thinking that looks at the problem from the client's point of view rather than the sales point of view. Most of the sales books out there are techniques, persuasion tips, personality tricks, closing gimmicks, things you can do to become.
You use tips, tricks, and gimmicks in that expression right there.
It's, you know, most of the sales books, that's what they are, right? You know, and
how to manipulate somebody to
how to persuade somebody to do something
as opposed to doing what you're doing, which is trying to understand how clients buy.
What? Yeah, exactly. Tom and I are not professional salespeople. We've never sold cars, Tupperware, timeshares, you name it. You know, we're trained in the skills that we provide, and it somehow felt wrong or somehow queasy or uneasy. We had sweaty palms when we were reading these sales books going, I don't want to be this guy.
Right.
I don't want to be manipulative.
That's the response that I get from all these training. You know, get out there and sell this stuff for the company. And you're, wait a minute here.
Yeah,
you
know, got to
be true to yourself. You got to shrink the pond, as you said. You got to be trustworthy and you got to be respected. Being likable to the point of lying, really, that's the part that it's a mistake, isn't it?
That we think so, and I think one of the reasons the books resonate with so many people. What I would say is, rather than trying to somehow torment yourself into something more likable, why don't you just try caring more?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Why don't you just look to the people that you want to serve and be more caring? Now, if you genuinely care about someone, I don't care what your personality is like, that human connection, I think will trump likability.
And think about, I'm thinking of my own life when I've paid attorney's bills or accountant bills or other specialist bills. I think of that person doing the work and the work and thought that they put in and the level of satisfaction I get in writing that check. is related to my belief and okay, this was not a, you know, they didn't just print out a blank form and have their assistant put stuff in there. Right. They actually thought about what I said, what we visited, they heard, they listened to what I said. And so now I'm feeling valued as a customer.
Yeah, I think I think you're right. And so I think when we look at it through the lens of how the client buys, it creates a tone of empathy as opposed to persuasion. And at the end of the day, we're gifted at doing certain very hard services that we've gone through dozens of years of training to get here. And we're just looking for people out there that need help solving these types of problems.
Right.
And our book is really about helping us understand how people go about making these hiring decisions and writing a book that would help them become more successful. Because this book didn't exist when I was 30, or Tom was 30, or when you were 30. And we hope that it'll help some of these people.
Doug, I really appreciate you coming in today. That's all the time that we have available. But I guess, you know, first of all, How Clients Buy is the book we're talking about. Doug Fletcher, local author, consultant, expert in professional services consulting. How would they find this book? How would they learn more about you? Where would they go?
So thanks for asking. It's offered on Amazon.com. It's published by Wiley. It's also on Wiley's book, website. But most everybody buys their books from Amazon. If you want to buy local, the Country Bookshelf has it, downtown Bozeman. We had a book signing there. They're an amazing...
And they always charge great prices. I assume it's the same price that you would go anywhere.
It's the same price that you would pay on Amazon. They have some author-signed copies down there that I think are still available.
Collectibles. Shrink in that pond. There's only a few of those out there.
So Country Bookshelf or Amazon, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Great. Doug, thank you so much for joining us on Preserving Your Wealth. This is Mike McCormick. Have a great week, everybody. Thank you very much.